the organizers for this invitation. And in fact, the program I'm going to present here is has already been presented by Jerry Bonnet, and I will just set some notation. And the problem, as he said, consists in finding the shape of a fluid domain which evolves with respect to time. So you have a fluid domain in the space, you have a vertical coordinate y, and you have some horizontal coordinate x, which might be in either the dimension d, in fact, 1 or 2, of course. You have some bottom, which is not necessarily flat, and parameterized by a function b of x, which does not depend on time. And the fluid at rest is at height 0, and at time t, it is parameterized by a function of zeta of t and x. And so we have a fluid domain here, omega. And inside this domain, we have, of course, some equation. We assume that the fluid is incompressible and irrotational. So we have some Laplace equation, a velocity potential phi, and the Laplace equation Laplace phi equal 0 within the fluid. And we have, of course, some boundary conditions. We have here that the normal derivative of phi at the boundary at the bottom is 0. This means that the fluid doesn't cross the bottom. And we assume the same thing at the surface, saying that a fluid particle which is at the surface won't cross this surface. And since the surface moved, this condition is not like this one, it's kinematic. And it reads dt zeta is square root of 1 plus square of zeta times the normal derivative of phi taken at the surface. And of course, we have also the Euler equation within the fluid, which reads as the Bernoulli equation that dt of phi plus g times y, g being the acceleration of gravity, which is of course positive, plus one half of the gradient of phi to the square. This quantity is equal to minus depression P, which is another unknown of the problem within the fluid. Okay, we need one last boundary condition to close this set of equation, and that is if we neglect surface tension, the pressure is constant at the surface, and we can assume it to renormalization that it is equal to zero. So we take P equal to zero here. Okay, so these are the other equations with free surface. This formulation of the equation is not very convenient for mathematical purposes because they are defined on the domain which moves with time, and so it's not very convenient. And we use another formulation which was used essentially by Craig, Schanz, and Sulem and Sulem, which consists in saying that, okay, you have here the velocity potential phi, you solve the Laplace equation, you have a Neumann condition at the bottom. So if you know the trace of phi at the surface, then you know phi everywhere solving this Laplace equation. Okay, so we introduce psi of t and x to be the trace of phi at the free surface. We define it like this. Then, of course, if you have psi, say, in h k plus 3 over 2 of Rd, as I said, you can solve the Laplace equation phi here. So this gives you phi, and you are then in h k plus 2 of the fluid domain omega. Okay, you just gain half a derivative. And then, if you take the normal derivative of phi at the surface, you lose 3 over 2 derivatives, and therefore this quantity, dn of phi at the surface, is in h k plus 1 half of rd. And assuming that zeta is smooth enough, we can put this factor here. It's still true. So we have some operator here, which to psi associates this quantity. This operator, we call it, it is the Dirichlet-Neumann operator sends to a Dirichlet condition psi, that is the Dirichlet condition for this equation, it associates the Neumann condition. Okay, so it's quite obvious to see that it is of order one. And now what we do is that we can write this equation in terms of this quantity psi and in terms of the elevation of the fluid, which is zeta. So this is some computation which is quite easy, but I'll just give you the result. The first one is this equation, it reads simply like this in terms of the Dirichlet-Neumann operator. And the second equation is obtained taking the trace of this equation at the surface, which gives P, since P is equal to zero at the surface, and gives an equation a bit more complicated, which is dt psi plus g times y plus one half of gradient of psi to the square minus one half of one plus gradient of zeta to the square times g zeta of psi plus gradient zeta gradient psi to the square equal to zero. Okay, so this is the equation we are going to work with from now on. And it is a set of two equations, two evolutionary equations on a fixed domain, which is RD. So this is quite convenient for mathematical studies. And, okay, so just before giving the theorem, I will prove, I just recall some results. So there are many results on what was the question. I will just give the maybe the most important ones. We have the first one, maybe from Nalimov in 74. Have Yozira in 82 and the work of Craig in 85, I think. So they did the 1D case. What I call 1D is 1D for the surface. So. And they did the case of small data. And the advantage of being in 1D is that the free domain is 2D, and so this is, you can say that you are in the complex plane and use tools of harmonic analysis. In particular, when you have this Dirichlet-Neumann operator, you can express it in terms of a Cauchy integral and use the tools of harmonic analysis. So this is a good, we have good tools to do this this study. So much later, there is a paper of Wu, I think it's 97, who did the 1D case for any data, but in infinite depth. And the trick to generalize, to obtain any data, is that she proved that we have a criterion of stability, which is called the Taylor criterion, and she proved that it's always satisfied. What is this criterion? I will comment on this later. It is that the normal derivative of the pressure at the surface has to be strictly negative, that is that the pressure is positive within the fluid. Yeah. No. Small in terms of Sobolev norms. Yeah. I just okay. That works also in analytic data. I just speak about Sobolev. Okay. And. There are works of analytics. Yes, there are proofs of. Yes. I should have said it. I just deal with the Sobolev data. And so Wu then in 99 did another paper where she covered the 2D case and see any data and infinite depth. And this paper is quite for normal person in PD is quite difficult because she. You cannot say that the free domain is in the complex sense, it's three-dimensional. But after the complex, you have the quaternions. And so what replaces harmonic analysis is Clifford analysity. And this are tools which are quite unusual. And okay, but doing this and with quite subtle results, she obtained the 2D generalization of this paper. And so the result I want to prove now has two goals. The first one was to cover the open cases, that is here in finite depth. And the other was to do a a proof which is quite elementary, and so which we can, for instance, adapt for numerical purpose if you want, or, and especially also for asymptotic studies, like Jerry told yesterday. So the theorem is this one. It is that there is some Sobolev index S not big enough, so that for all S bigger than this S not, for all initial data, zeta not, psi not, in H S plus 1 of RD, such that, so I have two conditions. The first one is that zeta not minus B is strictly positive, which means that we always have water, which is very natural. The second one is not natural at all, and in fact, it's only a sufficient condition, and I will comment on later. And I just give it because it's, okay. You have the, here, this is a surface, the bottom is a surface. You can take its second fundamental form, which is, which we call 2 of B. You take the initial velocity field V naught associated to this potential. You take its trace at the bottom, which is tangential, so this quantity makes sense. And if this is smaller than G over square root of 1 plus gradient of B to the square, then there exists T strictly positive, such that the system of equation S admits a unique solution, which is in C1 of 0T with values in HS. Okay? So, of course, I must give you a comment on this condition. So I will give another condition, which is more closer from a necessary condition. The interest of this condition is that it's obviously when the bottom is flat, it's automatically satisfied since the second fundamental form vanishes on flat bottoms. Okay, so this is the reason why I give it under this form, because it disappears when I have flat bottoms, or in infinite depth also, because V naught disappears. Okay, so the strategy to prove this theorem is very simple. We take this equation, we linearize the equations, we perform energy estimates, and we compute by an iterative scheme. So it's very simple, but the problem, the first problem arises when you want to linearize this, okay? It's all the time very easy to linearize, except this one, not to linearize it with psi, this is very easy, but with respect to zeta, because zeta is the shape of the domain. So you have to compute, in fact, the shape derivative of the Dirac to Neumann operator. Okay? So once you have done this, okay, you have the linearized equations. Okay, they are not non-strictly hyperbolic, in fact, but you can find some energy estimates. But it happens that you have loss of derivatives, so that the iterative scheme you will have to use is of Nash-Moser type. And since you have a Nash-Moser type iterative scheme, all the estimates you have to prove must be tame. Okay, we'll recall what is the tame estimate. And in fact, we need some tame estimate on this operator and on its commutators with derivative and all the time we have. And this is quite an amount of work. So this will be the first point, which will be I will give some tame estimates on the operator g zeta of psi on the Dirac to Neumann operators. Okay, so there exist some estimates on this operator. Walter Craig used some of them. The problem is that, to my knowledge, I don't know tame estimates which are optimal in the case we are interested in, I mean the 2D case with finer depth and non-flat bottoms. And in all the works, anyway, the strategy to prove the estimates on this operator was to express it in terms of singular integral operator, and then to use some very subtle works of Kaufman, Mayer, McIntosh, and Davis, and so on, to estimate this operator. And here I will just give a very elementary proof of tame estimate, which is quite I think, quite optimal. So I give you the estimate and then the proof. It's that you have d zeta of psi in Sobolev norm. It is controlled by a constant which depends, okay, on S, which depends on a Sobolev norm of zeta in some fixed Sobolev space HS naught times psi in H S plus 1 plus zeta in H S plus 1 times psi in H S naught. Okay, so what I call tame estimate is that you have a Sobolev norm which depends on a Sobolev index S here. You have a control in zeta and psi here, which depends on S also, of course, but linearly, okay? You might have some nonlinear terms here, but the Sobolev index does not depend on S, okay? So where it depends on S, it's linear, and this is what we call the tame estimate, and this is what is essential for the Nash-Moser scheme. Okay, so as I said, the method I will prove is elementary. It's only elliptic estimate. So I will first do some remark, very naive remark. If you had, if the domain were like that, okay, omega, with Laplacian phi equal to zero here, and with some phi equal psi at the boundary, then we would have g zeta of psi in H k plus 1/2. This would be controlled by the norm of phi in H k plus 2 of the whole domain. Okay, this is the Neumann condition, so it's controlled by this. And this, in turn, is controlled by, you have psi here in H k plus 3 over 2 of the boundary of d omega. But this is true only if your domain is regular. So if it is infinity, it's true, of course. You must assume that more or less d omega is in some space like this, which means that it has it's bounded, and its k plus 2 first derivatives are also bounded. So here this means that the domain is not like this. The domain is a strip. The domain is given by zeta. Okay, so we must assume that zeta is in this space, and in terms of Sobolev space, we must assume that zeta is in HS with S strictly bigger than d over 2 plus k plus 2. Okay, and in fact, we would like here to have zeta in k plus 3 over 2. Okay, so we have to gain d plus 1 over 2 derivatives with respect to this naive theorem here. Derivatives. And have to gain them strictly. So how do we do this? The first thing is to use the peculiar topology of the free domain, which is a strip. So we have a strip like this. We have b, we have zeta here. And, okay, take here a flat strip, minus 1, and zero, which we call S, like this. And we have a diffeomorphism here, which we call S of X tilde Y tilde. We can assume that the first, the horizontal variables are invariant. So we have this diffeomorphism under this form. So I give you an example if you want. Have S of X and Y is minus b of times y plus 1 plus y a of x. Okay? This is one of them. And of course, you have here your Laplace equation with a Dirichlet condition at the surface psi and homogeneous Neumann condition at the bottom. So this is transformed by the diffeomorphism. So what you obtain is here minus divergence of p gradient of phi tilde equal to 0 phi tilde at 0 is psi, and the conormal derivative associated to this elliptic operator of phi tilde at minus 1 is 0. Okay, I must tell you, of course, that phi tilde is phi composed with the diffeomorphism, and P is an explicit matrix, that I can give you the expression if you want, is 1 over dy of s times dy of s times identity minus gradient of s transpose 0 identity, and the same matrix transpose. Okay, so it's symmetric and it's coercive, all what you want. So in fact, this equation is transformed like this one. Okay, so the first thing that we have to study now are some elliptic boundary value problems of this form. Okay, but at this point, we don't know anything about the diffeomorphism, okay? If we want to give some results, we must make some assumption on the diffeomorphism. So we have the first one, assumption one, is that you can decompose S under this form, S1 plus S2, and you have S1, which is bounded with all its derivative in the strip, and S2, which is Sobolev in some with some Sobolev index big enough. So here, of course, you would take this to be S1 and this to be S2, which is implied if A is in Sobolev space, okay? B is the bottom, so you can suppose whatever you want. Since it's fixed, you just forget about B if you want. Okay, so under this assumption, you can prove, it's technical, but it's elementary, that this matrix P, you can decompose it under this form, P1 plus P2. You have P1 in all the space WK infinity of S, which is just a constant which depends on K and S1. And the component P2 is a Sobolev component. And you have HK, in norms HK, it's bounded by the constant which depends on K, which depends on S2 in some fixed Sobolev norm, and in S1 times S2 in norms HK plus 1 of S. So this estimate also is tame, which is very important. Okay, so now what you can do is, of course, to give some estimates here on this kind of elliptic boundary value problems. So we have g theta of psi. Of course, we have an expression in terms of the lifted problem. It is the conormal derivative of phi tilde taken at zero, which by definition is ed plus one is the unit vector which is vertical, times the matrix P times the gradient of phi tilde taken at zero. So quite easily you see that g theta of psi in h k plus 1/2 is controlled, it's controlled with tame estimates, by you need phi in a norm h k plus 2 and P, okay, whatever P. Essentially, we have this, and thus you have to prove now some elliptic estimates. So this is controlled by the derivative condition in H K plus 3 over 2, and S2, and I mean P2, in H K plus 1 over S. So how do you prove this? This is, I mean, elliptic estimate. This is the classical proof here of, Nuremberg, for instance. And okay, with differential quotients, it's okay. It's technical, but it's quite classical. The only thing is that you must at every time when you estimate, you must use a tame product estimate. Okay, so this is just meaning that you have to be careful, but there is no difficulties here. But you obtain this tame estimate here. And of course, what you want to do is to replace. You take now this diffeomorphism, you replace. And this gives you that this is controlled by S2 in H, K plus 2 of S. And with the example I gave, this gives you zeta in H, K plus 2 of S, of RD this time. Okay? So I mean, you don't have the estimate I gave you. For this estimate, here we would like to have K plus 3 over half. I mean, we gained strictly G over 2 derivatives, but we still have to gain half a derivative more. Okay, so how do we do this? This kind of estimate here is quite optimal, so we cannot gain anything. The only way, the only freedom we have is here. At this point, we can choose the diffeomorphism cleverly. And this is the key point, if you want, the key lemma, which says that there exists what I call regularizing diffeomorphisms. That is, diffeomorphism S, such that you have S2, the subref component of the diffeomorphism, in H k plus 2 of the strip, which is controlled tamely by some constant, times zeta in H k plus 3 over half. So you gain half a derivative in the choice of your diffeomorphism, okay? So how do we choose this diffeomorphism? It's only, of course, it has to be non-local. It won't be an affine diffeomorphism like this. It will be some non-local perturbation of this diffeomorphism. It's like, if you want, morally, you have this diffeomorphism at the boundary has to be equal to zeta. Okay, so it's like if you had to solve some elliptic boundary value problem with Dirichlet condition zeta, so you gain half a derivative. This is morally, this is the idea. So thanks to this lemma, you have this estimate, okay, which is quite optimal, and it's tame, and it's with very elementary tools. Okay, so now we can, as I said, we have some further property to prove in order to conclude, and in particular we have to control some commutators of the Dirichlet to Neumann operator and some shapes, and to compute the shape derivative. So we have some further properties to establish. So there, in fact, there are three of them. The first one will be to compute the principal symbol of the Dirichlet to Neumann operator. The second one will be to compute the commutators. And the third one will be to compute the shape derivative. Okay, so for the first one, it's quite computing symbols of Dirichlet to Neumann operators is something which is quite new. The problem is that normally it's new in smooth domain. And here, the shape of the domain is one of the unknown. So you have to keep track of the depend on the boundary of your domain, which is one of the difficulties. So I just, okay, the method is, you can find it in the book of Treves or Taylor, which is factorization of elliptic operator. And I just give you the result like this. Let the symbol g zeta of x and psi, this is 1 plus gradient zeta to the square times psi to the square minus gradient zeta dot psi to the square. So this is, of course, positive. Then what you have is that g of zeta and psi minus g zeta of x and d, which is the pseudo-differential associated to operator associated to this symbol, applied to psi, in norm, I will need L2 and H one half here, is controlled by a constant which depends only on a finite number of derivatives of the norm of zeta and psi, of zeta, times psi in L2 and h 1 half. Okay, so since this is of order 1 and that you don't lose any derivative, this is the principal symbol. Okay, so just in the constant. Okay. I mean, we could do it for any Sobolev index. This would be more difficult, but in fact, here we don't need it. Yes, in the constant. But a finite number. And an important remark, but in dimension 1, you have that the symbol g zeta of x and psi is the absolute value of psi. And in dimension 2, it's of course not the case. This is a real pseudo-differential operator. And this is one of the reasons why the 2D case is much more difficult, because when you have to control commutators with derivatives for this, okay, it's zero. And for this, it's not zero, it's much more difficult. Okay, so now, now these commutators, in fact, as we saw, the derivatives of order k plus 1 half play an important role, so we are going to look at commutators with this kind of derivatives. And in fact, we are going to look at commutators of order k plus 1 half. We look at them like this, lambda 1 half d alpha commutated with g zeta applied to psi. And I will, lambda, big lambda is the derivative operator of order 1, which is this one. And here, of course, we have alpha is a multi-index smaller than k. Okay, so the idea here is that you can decompose this term. You write it like this, lambda 1 half commutated with g zeta applied to d alpha of psi plus lambda 1 half applied to the commutator of d alpha and g zeta of psi. So we have two terms. The first one here is okay because the commutator is with derivatives which do not depend on the index k. So any estimate you can obtain with this one will be tame, of course. It won't depend on k. And so for this term, you just have to use this proposition here. It gives you the result. There is no problem here. So this term is okay. The second one is more tricky because you have, and I won't do it, but the idea is that you have here lambda 1 half, and what you have to control is the L2 norm of this term. Okay, so the L2 norm of this term also, and there's the H 1 half norm of this term. And the idea is to make this appear more or less as a Neyman condition of some boundary elliptic problem of order 2. Okay, and since if it's this Neyman condition, you can control this term, the H 1 half norm of this term, by the L2 norm of the source term of this elliptic boundary value problem, okay? And it appears that this source term is very easy to control, and it gives you the control. So this is how we do it. And finally, the result is like this, that you have this term is controlled in L2 norm, is controlled tamely by some constant which depends on k, which depends on zeta in some fixed Sobolev norm HS net, time psi in h k plus 1 half plus zeta in h k plus 3 half psi HS net. Okay, so this is one of the reasons why we have to use Nash-Moser, because here we lose information here, because you see that psi here is k plus 1 half, and here you need one derivative more here. This is absolutely normal, because your commutator here will kill the most singular terms in psi, but it has no reason to kill it in zeta. Unless you are in dimension 1, but in general it's not true. Okay, so we have this estimate, and now we can do the third point, which is the shape derivative. Yes? No, okay, we have to control time derivative also, but okay, this is separate, and that's not the most difficult one. The shape derivative, we have to compute, we want to differentiate the mapping zeta to Dirichlet-Neumann operator. I gave it expression before, it is ED plus 1 times P gradient of phi tilde taken at 0. And in fact, the matrix P and the your solution phi tilde depend on the domain. So I will just put the index zeta here to recall the dependence on zeta. So you have to compute the derivative of the maps which to zeta associates P, which is simple calculus, which is absolutely no problem. And you have to compute the derivative of the map which to zeta associates phi tilde, which is more difficult. In fact, we need, so let V be the derivative of the map zeta gives phi tilde zeta at some point zeta bar and in some direction h. Okay, what we need is the conormal derivative of v at zero, okay? Because you differentiate here, so this is the conormal derivative. So how do we do this? So formally, and there's not many difficulty in proving that it's indeed the case, you have the equation for phi is this one. So you just have to differentiate the equation with respect to zeta, and you find that you must have minus divergence of P gradient of V is equal to gradient divergence of the derivative of P at zeta bar in direction H times gradient of phi tilde. Here you have V at zero is equal to zero, and the conormal derivative of V at minus one is ED plus one times the derivative of P at zeta bar and in direction H times gradient of phi tilde taken at minus one. Okay, so this is an elliptic boundary value problem for V. And in fact, what we could do is give the principal symbol of V of the mapping which to zeta gives V, like we did it for the principal symbol of the Dirichlet Neumann operator. This is possible, but the problem with this is that you will have some lower order terms, and for the initial estimate, it will be very tough to control. So in fact, we have quite a bit of lag, because we can remark that you can lift this problem up. You take W to be, okay, the derivative of diffeomorphism with respect to zeta in direction H, divided by the vertical derivative of the diffeomorphism times the vertical derivative of phi tilde, but this is some function on the strip, then you have minus divergence of P gradient of V minus W is equal to zero. The conormal derivative of V minus W at minus one is equal to zero. And of course, here you won't find zero. You will just find some H over zeta minus B times dy of phi tilde taken at zero. So, I mean, this is a lot of computation to check that this is the case. So how do you find this? This is just, in fact, the formula. You can do the Hadamard calculus computation for the elastic plates, okay, where he proved such things in variational form. So you find an expression you want to find, and then you can leave this problem and find this. So what you need is, as I said, the conormal derivative of V at zero, which is the conormal derivative of W at zero, which is explicit, plus the conormal derivative of V minus W at zero, which is, since you have zero here and zero here, which is exactly the Dirichlet-Neumann operator applied to this term. So in fact, we have an explicit expression for the shape derivative, which is this theorem, that you have, you want to differentiate this expression in direction H. It is explicitly given by minus g of zeta bar h z bar minus divergence of h z bar. And you have here z bar, which is an explicit function of zeta bar and psi. And v bar, it's a vector which is an explicit function of zeta bar and psi also. So this is really interesting, because we have here, it's not at leading or other terms. it is the full expression of the shape derivative. So that now, at last, we can give the linearized equation. So, since we have this explicit expression, the other terms don't cause any problem. We have an explicit expression for the water wave equation. So, the operator, linearized operator L bar around some state U bar, which is equal to zeta bar psi bar, is given by L bar is dt plus, okay, have, take my note, it's not a very simple expression, but it's, you have all the terms, so it's, this is what is interesting, which is d zeta of z plus divergence of z. Here you have minus the Dirac-Kettleman operator. Here you have z times z zeta times z and zero other terms here. Okay, so just, it's heavy, but you can write it down. And you can compute the principal symbol of this expression, okay? And what happens is, as I said before, that the you find that the eigenvalues are purely imaginary. This is the good news. But the bad news is that they are the same. They're okay, the same eigenvalue. So that you cannot conclude at this point that the Cauchy problem associated to L bar is well posed. You need some Levy condition on the subprincipal symbol associated to L bar. And in order to see this Levy condition, you must write, the most easy way to see it is to write the principal symbol of this operator under canonical form, which is under the triangular form, and thus we will see the Jordan block. So the problem is, okay, and doing this is just linear algebra for a 2x2 matrix, it's very simple. But in fact, the change of basis will have to be completely pseudo-differential. It will be something heavy. So, but okay, you do it, and what you find is that you're very happy because this change of variable is not pseudo-differential, and it's very simple. It's just take this one, you find V like this. So this will trigonalize the principal part of this operator. But a priori, we have some very nasty zero-order terms, which will be commutators of the Dirac-Kettleman operators with Z and all the V and etc. And in fact, all these commutators disappear. And you obtain a very, very simple expression, which is that you have the equation L of U is equal to H is equivalent to the equation M of V is equal to H1 and H2 minus Z H1. And M bar here is simply dt plus gradient of divergence of V, like this, V times gradient minus G, and here some scalar A, which is explicit, which is G, plus dt of Z plus gradient of Z times V, okay, which are the same as in this theorem here. So this is really simple, okay, this is very short expression, and it's very easy to see the Levy condition here, because we know that the Dirac-Kettleman operator here is positive, okay, you have the diagonal term with the double eigenvalue, which is the same here, and of course, the Levy condition is that A must be positive here. Okay, so this is, at this point, we make it as a Levy condition. So, we have make this assumption, which is that A must be bigger than some positive constant. Okay, so if you do this, then you can prove, okay, you can prove that the Cauchy problem to M is well posed. You can find some energy estimates which are 10 because we did all what was needed to prove it. From these estimates, you deduce tame estimates for the Cauchy problem for this equation, and thus you have tame energy estimates for the water wave equation. So now we can conclude. It would be a direct conclusion by Nash-Moser iterative scheme if we had this expression satisfied. But we have to check that this is satisfied. And as I said, a very important criterion is the Taylor criterion that I gave on the derivative, normal derivative of the pressure of the pressure at the surface. And what happens is that this is the same. In fact, the proposition is if the state around which you linearize solves the equation at time t equal to t0, then first point you have that A at t0 is the normal derivative of P at the surface. Of course, we don't have pressure here, so we have to define some pressure, but okay, you define it, and you find that this is the case. So the Taylor criterion and this Levy condition are exactly the same. And then, second step, you prove that it's okay. I mean, H2 is okay if you have this condition on V of at T0 at the boundary on the second fundamental form. So this is where it appears. The necessary condition, of course, is this one, almost necessary, if this is smaller than this quantity. Okay, but on this expression, with this expression of A, it is absolutely not obvious that it's satisfied for flat bottoms, okay? This is why I prefer the other one. Okay, so now that we have this, we can conclude. We take the equations which are given here to say that it's dtu plus some nonlinear function f of u equal to 0. So you can construct some function which would solve this equation at any order at time t equal 0. Okay, this is just by Taylor expansion. Once you have construct this function satisfies the equation at t equal t0. So, in particular, thanks to this proposition, it will satisfy this assumption here. If its assumption this assumption is satisfied, then in a small neighborhood, all the energy estimates we have done will hold. And so in this neighborhood, we can conclude by a Nash-Moser iterative scheme, which gives the theorem I gave you at the beginning. Okay.